Welcome back to episode number 4 of the last time of it's going to be called the Aycliffe Running Club podcast. Because last episode we put a call out for potential new names and we came up with a shortlist, and over the past 24 hours our members have been voting. Now it's come down to a close call between two particular names. The first one is Running Off at the Mouth, and the second one is Less Talking and More Running. And there's only 4 votes between them. And the winner is Less Talking, More Running. So from next week's episode, that will be the new name of the podcast. Paul, what do you reckon of that then? Decent name?
It's a cool name. I just don't think Less Talking for a podcast, that's what we're here for.
I was in two minds when I, because it's funny enough, it was the name I came up with. The original one was More Talking, Less Running, which would have been a nice twist on if we did it earlier on in lockdown, because obviously you have to reduce the amount of exercise we could do outdoors, and everyone's getting on Zoom and Skype. We're doing a lot more talking, surprisingly, even though we can't see each other. But I thought we're a bit past that now, so I flipped it the other way, seeing we're now doing more running and less talking. So I don't know. We're introduced our guests for today. It's two of the quickest members of our club, two of the coolest members of our club.
I'll take that, youngest,
I am totally overselling this. But I think,
what?
No, the two good friends of mine and Paul. It's John Surtees and Tracy Surtees. How are you both doing, guys?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Corey.
Just before we get on to the topic, John, you've got a new segment for our podcast. Do you want to talk about it and introduce it?
Yeah, don't worry. It's not one that you've got to get your running shoes on and try and bag on Strava or anything like that. But just, I saw on Twitter kind of a couple of weeks ago, there was a block of photos of maybe 20 actors, and it says, name your favourite 3 most iconic actors. I just thought it would be something different for people to maybe identify their most favourite runner and kind of why, really. So I pinged it to Corey, and he had a bit think about it, Corey, and you kind of came up with, at the start of each podcast, someone would pick a runner and provide 3 clues that people could hopefully try and figure out the runner by the end of the podcast. I think that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct, mate, yeah.
Okay. So do you want me 3 clues for this week's runner?
Yeah, just give all 3 of them out straight away, and then we'll have the answer at the end of the podcast.
Okay. So as I was saying to Corey before the start of the podcast, I've been a bit stingy with the clues. So this person trains in Kaptagat in Kenya. They have a 5,000-metre PB of 12:46.53, and they have 1 gold medal to their name.
Oh, well, I'm stumped already.
Yeah, it's a bit sketchy, do you know what I mean? Unless you're a real statistician of athletics, you could be scratching around. But I didn't want it to make it too easy. So if you need an additional clue at the end or towards the middle or whatever, I'm happy to give that.
Well, a good gauge would be from Paul. Paul's very up to date on his athletics. Do you have any ideas what it could be?
I have an idea, but I'm going to keep my powder dry for now.
Maybe
appreciate another clue maybe halfway through the podcast.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, we'll do that then. So on to today's topic. I came up with this alliteration when we were first starting out with the podcast, and I've kind of stuck with it because, well, it's alliteration. It sounds cool, so I'm sticking with it. It's trainers, trends and technology, more of the fun, quirky side of running, so to speak. But before we kind of dive into that directly, I think a good starting point, and a starting point we've done on a lot of podcasts, is kind of talk about how you guys have got into running, and then we'll go on from into trainers and that, etc. So I'll start with you, Tracy. When did you start running, and how did you end up joining the club?
So I did quite a bit of running when I was at school, but I mainly did like track events. I didn't really like the long distance. Did a bit of cross country, but wasn't fussed on that. It was the mainly track. Then went to college, became a bit lazy, didn't do any kind of sport at college. Left college and thought, oh, I'm just going to start running again. I remember leaving my house and I probably managed a mile and I was absolutely shattered. And I ended up walking back home and being like, oh my God, I can't believe how unfit I am. And then I continued from there. I did actually join Dale and Harry's running club at one point.
Could someone just ring Claire and check Johnny hasn't fallen off his chair and just
it's funny for a brief moment, it didn't last very long. Then moved to Aycliffe and John was doing football on a Sunday morning. I didn't know anybody, I was a bit bored, so I thought, what can I do? So I decided to start running again. And I remember at one point getting to like 6 miles and coming back and like proper buzzing because I'd done me 6 miles. And then John gave up football and you started running as well, didn't you? And then at one point, I was actually quicker than John. At one point, we went out for a run and I was quicker than John. It was like, didn't last very long, but I still treasure that moment.
Yeah, I think we got 2 miles into it round there. The Huntsman Loop, the Woodham Loop, and kind of, I'd done the Woodham Loop, and I said to Tracy, I'm going to have to walk back, you know, and just kind of waved her on, and that was it, and I walked over after 2 miles, yeah.
Unfortunately, that'll never, ever happen again.
I don't know.
But one thing I did, when I first started running, I did run in, I was asking John what they were called, Adidas Taekwondo shoe, that's what I first went running in, because I didn't have anything else.
I've never heard of them before.
Corey, so at one point, you know, these were in fashion and they're like, so if you imagine what like a Taekwondo fighter would do, like fighting, like these really like leather thin kind of trainers, that's what they were in the fashion to wear as like your trainers at one point, you know, like as outrageous as that seems, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So not an ideal trainer to run in, that's for sure.
Sounds like you were running in moccasins.
I might as well have been. And then John was like, got a bit better at running. He was like, oh, should we join the club? We ummed and ahed for ages, didn't we? I was a bit sceptical. I thought, oh, what if we're not fit enough? Or what if it's a bit clicky? But anyways, John eventually persuaded us. So we went along for the first session. It was on a Tuesday night. And it was great. Everyone was so friendly and so welcoming. Everyone made the effort to talk to us. And after that, we just continued to go back, and that was it.
That sounds fun. What was the first session you did, do you remember?
Yeah, it was the Burnside Blast.
Burnside Blast, a very iconic route.
Yes. Yeah, and I think I did it in like 21 Summit, I think, the first session there.
That's still fantastic.
It was good session.
John, what was your decision to switch from football to running?
I don't know, I was just getting a little bit older, really. I think it was about kind of 28, and just, I don't know.
Past it.
Yeah, no, I just had enough, really. I just had enough of it. And for one reason or another, I just had enough of it. And kind of, I was still doing it, but at the time, parkrun had taken off, and a couple of my friends were doing Sedgefield Parkrun, and said, oh, come along. I thought, oh, blooming F 3 mile. Anyway, I dragged myself around parkrun. I think just that element of, you know, being competitive with yourself against a watch is kind of something that really drives me, really. That kind of got me hooked. And then I just was just that constant going back week after week, trying to whittle your time down bit by bit. That's really what got me, and trying to progress my time. That's kind of what made me really made the switch in the end.
No, I had a similar switch. We go back a bit, don't we, John? We've met before.
no, Corey, don't be showing my age, by the way. And I'll make sure we have to get this story correctly, you know, in terms of I want my precise age. There is, like, the boundaries of age here, do you know what I mean? So...
Well, do you want to tell a story then? So the
fact no, no, I'll let you tell a story. I'm not stealing your thunder, but I might jump in and just...
right, okay. So I went to Carmel School in Darlington. I think it must have... Was I in year 7 or year 8?
Yeah, whoa, you're definitely in year 7, fresh out of year 6, Corey. You know?
Okay.
did you teach him, John? Is that what we're saying? Is that what we're going with this?
I was on my teacher training that year as well, so like I was kind of fresh out of uni as well, so it wasn't that much of an age difference.
Yeah, so that's how we met. You were doing your teacher training there and obviously taking quite a lot of our peer classes. I remember when I made it to the Downton Schools team, you helped a lot with that as well and stuff like that. So, and then I always saw you running the Browns Acres a lot. So I always knew who you were and that. So when I joined the club, it was no surprise that you were already there. So, yeah, sorry for bringing that up, but...
No, yeah. I mean, it has been a bit bizarre, you know, obviously.
Yeah,
we're friends, haven't we, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But, you were right at the start of my teaching career.
Right at the start.
Yeah, right at the very start, like literally at the start.
All right. Yeah. I think we should move on to, we've touched on it already with what you mentioned there, Tracy, about those, what were they called again?
Adidas type. What was it?
Taekwondo.
Shit. So we've been running a fair few years now, and you'd like to think that you've picked up some tips and advice about running trainers and about what's suitable and the different reasons behind that. Do you kind of want to touch on what you've picked up and what goes into picking a pair of trainers these days?
Yeah. Tracy.
So I ran in them Adidas Taekwondo. It was basically because I didn't have any running trainers and I didn't want to go and spend a fortune if I wasn't going to keep it up. And then I ran in them. I got a bit of a niggle. I can't remember where it was now, behind my knee possibly. And then I thought, right, I need some decent trainers. So I went to Up and Running in Darlington and they had us run on a treadmill to get me gait and see how I ran. And that was my first proper pair of trainers. Since then, I think I bought Asics at that time, but I'm not sure which ones. And since then, I've used Asics Nimbus. I did go to Saucony at one point, but I did Achilles issues with them. So I went back to Asics Nimbus and my Achilles issue went. I think they give us like quite a high support at the back of the shoe. So for me, I won't change now. I won't use any of a trainer. I think once you find one that suits, I think you should stick to it. Because I didn't really realise how difference a trainer can make, like what a difference a trainer can make with regards to injuries if you don't get the right one. But yeah, like when you go and get your gait check, like they tell you like if you're a neutral runner or do you pronate, John?
Yeah, I've got I think it started off as a slight pronation and I got a gait test done quite recently down in Leeds in I think it's called Runner's Needs, a shop, and it's like, wow, I can't believe I'm actually running with that, you know what I mean? It's quite significant now. But just kind of what Trace was saying, when I originally ran in Asics GT 2000, which are a support shoe, kind of my mid-support shoe, and I ran around in them for maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, and I always struggled with Achilles problems. And then for whatever reason, I don't know, I changed to Saucony Guides. Again, a kind of a medium support shoe, you know, kind of, if you were to compare the purpose of the shoe for both companies, they're exactly the same really, but within probably about 3 months of running Saucony Guides, I've never had, touch wood, any problems with Achilles issues. So I think getting the right shoe, the right type of shoe, but also the one that is right for you is kind of really, really important, because although there's just slight differences in them, it can have a, when you're logging those amount of miles and kind of using them time after time, it can have a real kind of impact on injuries and niggles and stuff like that.
And I think as well, it's important to change your trainer. Like, you can only do so many miles in them. Like, I think I possibly keep mine for maybe 2 months, sometimes 3 months, and then they get changed. I think if you run in the same trainer for too long, that can cause injuries as well.
And what do you think then about using different trainers for different types of sessions? So, for instance, if you're going out and just doing some easy mileage, or if you're doing a tempo session or an interval session, might you mix up your trainer choice then?
Yeah, I mean, we were saying it's kind of, if you look at our understair cupboard, you open it up and a trainer jumps out and hits you in the face. Like, honestly, it's ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, kind of, we both have like our main mileage shoe where you're doing those kind of, just that steady running or your long run, and kind of that's where you put the bulk of miles in those shoes. But then, you know, faster shoes, you might have, I've got, I think they're called Adidas Tempos, but really use them for Adidas for tempo work. Kind of some of the Nike shoes, which I know we're going to probably touch on a little bit later on. But a lot of them for a bit of kind of faster work as well. And I suppose it's whatever your aim is of that session. But I think one thing to bear in mind is that sometimes because they're so fast or they feel so fast, you get that temptation to run in them all the time. And I think, for me, it's, you know, you've got to keep that main mileage shoe, going back to that for the easy runs, because that's the one that gives you the support and kind of the comfort and helps you avoid that injury. So yeah, definitely a big fan of different types of shoes for different types of sessions. Yeah.
There's been a few times, John, where you've come with a backpack with a spare pair of trainers.
Yeah.
We run down, do the warm up, we get to the start of the session, and then you change trainers, and there's always. There's always that one type, isn't there? Your favourite pair.
Yeah. No, I do. Like, I just, because for me, the kind of the faster shoe is a neutral shoe. So I always try and do all the work, all or the majority and the bulk of my work in kind of that shoe that gives me the support that I need. So I always try and limit what I'm actually running in the shoe that's the neutral shoe, because that doesn't have the support for kind of my overpronation. And I know if I've done too much in kind of a neutral shoe, I do kind of get, you know, that soreness in the calf or wherever it is, really. So if I can run 2 miles to a session and run 2 miles back from a session as a cool down, so that's like obviously 4 miles, and I can do that in my normal shoe, that really kind of helps me. So yeah, and I just like carrying backpacks around, you know what I mean? So.
Bob Graham round.
I'm just prepping for my Bob Graham round.
Yeah. I think one of the things that you did touch upon earlier, you know, certainly was the gait analysis, and I think that is kind of crucial, really. I know that others in the club have had issues, and then I've gone and had gait analysis done to resolve those issues. For yourselves, was it both just on a treadmill through observation, looking at your range of motion and such like, or was there any other techniques that were involved?
No, I mean, I got one done, it which was at the sweatshop when I originally got my first one done, and that was, you know, just a little bit of video playback, and I'm probably talking about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years when that was done, and it was just a person in the shop saying, look at your foot as it hits the ground and how it rolls in, but the one I got done in Leeds and runners needs. They obviously advanced the technology a little bit, so they could kind of slow it down frame by frame, and you know, then they were able to kind of draw lines on it and stuff like that, and place lines on your foot type of thing, and just just a bit more kind of advanced software really. But like you say, Dolly, it is massively crucial, I think, in terms of understanding the trainer that you need, and it's not just going. Oh, they look really cool. You know, I kind of want to run around in those ones. Which, yeah. Sorry, Dolly. Yeah, but you know, kind of, it is. It's so important to get the right shoe for you, really.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to jump ahead onto new tech, because I don't know if you know Craig Downs from Crook Athletic Club, but he's been developing something called MIMO, which is a sensor device that fits around the ankle and the foot. And it's actually measures your gait. And it's got a link to an app, which will then recommend the trainers for your specific gait.
Right.
He's been in development for the last couple of years. He's launching it in September of this year. But I mean, it's great that you've got a bit of tech there that maybe you can get your hands on and do it yourself, because it's all real-time data that you receive back. And then obviously you can log onto the app and see which shoes would be suitable for yourself, and also developed in the northeast as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, because I always think there's limitations to the gait analysis, because you know, you're walking around the Metro Centre or whatever it is, and you're in your jeans, and then you jump on a treadmill, and, you know, you've got a couple of people looking at you, so you feel you don't almost go into your natural stride. So I think something like that, that is going to analyse over maybe a week or 2 weeks, and then makes a suggestion on that kind of real-time data that it's getting, will probably be more accurate and beneficial than what's currently on the market at the minute.
Yeah, it's just a bit, I think, subjective when people are observing you from different angles and things like that.
Like John says, you're probably self-conscious that someone's watching you as well, so you're probably not running naturally like you would normally.
No, definitely not. And I think the more data available, the better with anything.
Technology and
so on. We touched on it there earlier with the Nike trainers. They've taken, in recent years, have taken such a strong foothold in the market due to the technology they use, with especially with the carbon fiber plate coming out, and the 4% more efficient slogan they go for based on their science. I'm not sure how much independent research has been taken out on that, but that's for other people to delve into. But overall, do you guys think it's a positive or negative thing that now we're seeing such the dominance of one type of shoe or a brand of shoe even?
Well, for always anything that can help you go quicker, I'm all for it. Like,
I mean, I know there's someone who sat on the, you know, you've got your purists in the conversation who, you know, might not be drawn towards them, but kind of for me, they're a brilliant shoe.
Yeah.
And you know, whether it gives you 4%, you know, increase in performance, I'm not too sure. I don't know how you measure that.
But if it does, again, I'm like all for that. If it gives me extra 4%, it makes me quicker and it gets me that PB, then I'll take it.
But I also think it certainly does move you. It does. I mean, you put them on, like, if you warm up, like sometimes I warm up in kind of main chunky mileage shoe, put them on, and you just, it's like, I know people say it, but like you feel like you've got springs in your feet,
naturally rock you forward. Like when you're running, you can feel like rock on them. It's and the spring in them. Like, yeah, in comparison to your racing flats before, like I used to run in Adidas Boost. And now in comparison to them, because obviously they were racing flats, they had no foam in them, no like spring. So yeah, I like them and they're comfy.
I think the thing is, the Meta Rocker that I think you're talking about sits kind of in the middle and helps you transition. That's not new, and that's not new to Nike specifically. A lot of trainers in the past, I had some Puma Fast 500s that had a Meta Rocker in them.
I remember you talking about them.
And again, likewise, the carbon plate that Nike might have brought forward, others are now using it. I know New Balance are using it. And I know that Hoka in their Carbon X are using it as well. So I think that eventually, the way it's going to go, everyone's going to have it. It's just obviously that Nike got in first, I think.
Yeah.
So it is going to be the way it is. And obviously, we've got obviously, Hoka have always had that chunky foam cushioning to the sole, but with the combination of the carbon fiber plate, I think that's what gives it the extra spring, if you like, the extra return from the road surface. I mean, obviously, the IAAF or whoever made a decision on whether they're legal or not, and if they allow them, they allow them. So make the most of them. I just can't see me paying £240 for a pair.
No, I mean,
we ran about it before, weren't we? Because we went down to do Dewsbury 10K, and we called in at the outlet. Is it Leeds, the outlet?
Castleford,
yeah. We called in the outlet, and they had some in the sale in the Nike shop. And I was like, oh, sod it, I'm going to get some, because they were crazy cheap in comparison to normal. So I got some and I thought, do I dare do Dewsbury 10K in them, with them being a new trainer? And again, I thought, sod it. So I did the Dewsbury 10K and I got a PB. And John was like, it's the trainers. So guess what? Went straight back to that Nike outlet.
On the way home.
And just bought some of the trainers.
They definitely, I mean, you talk about like that stronghold in terms of the market. I remember going to Darlington Park Run, I think it was maybe February time this year, I can't remember, maybe it was a little bit before that. I remember being stood on the start line and look around, and literally, like, you saw the green version, you saw the pink version, you saw the Edikin version, you saw the 4% version, and like everyone had them on, and I just thought, yeah, like, they are kind of, especially on race day, I wouldn't say necessarily people are training in them because it's too bloody expensive, but like the, you know, on that race day, people are definitely kind of using them more and more, really.
On a serious point, though, because I know sort of we mock each other about the use of trainers and things like that. Yeah. What's the durability like on them? Because, I mean, obviously you're saying you maybe save them for like a key race or, you know, sort of like a time trial you're wanting to get, you know, go for. What is the durability like on them?
Well, I've got the Zoom, so I've got the Zoom flies, and I've got them out, and I've probably had, well, in terms of logging them on Garmin, I've had 270 mile out with them. And to be fair, they're all right. I went out on them on Saturday, and they, you know, they're still, you know, they still feel good, really. But then the Vaporflies, I've only had probably, I've done about 40 mile in mine, and you can see kind of, it's because the foam's different on them, and you can see that that's kind of start the tread almost on it is wearing, and I'm a heel striker, so where I strike on one of my heels, you know, obviously that gets a lot of hammer, especially in a race when your form goes a little bit as well. So that's kind of rubbing off already after about 40 miles. So I'd probably think, I don't know, 100 mile maybe you'd probably get out of them. But if you're saving them for key races, it's a few 10Ks, isn't it? You know what I mean? So, that's what I tell myself anyway.
Yeah.
It's not speedwear all the time anyway, so I'll be fine.
Anything for babies. Flash a bit of cash, anything for a baby.
Yeah.
Not that you've got a vested interest, Corey, because I think you've got a pair as well, haven't you?
Been caught out, yeah. I've just bought a pair of Zoom flies. But I'm a student, so I've got to be a bit tighter with money. And I keep looking at them. I'm like, I want to. And eventually, I can't remember, I think it was about 160 quid I paid for in the end, and that was of it going down and whatever deals I could get off it. And that's the thing, it's the price, because Nike have such a dominance in the market. They can set the price, because up until recently, they've had next to no competition.
Yeah.
So that's been, in my opinion, the only downside to it. But hopefully, as you mentioned, with like Hoka, and I think New Balance have come out with something recently, haven't they?
Yeah, and Saucony's done one. It's a new one. I think they're called Saucony Endorphine or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. I haven't seen them. But yeah, hopefully the overall price for those type of trainers will hopefully come down to a more realistic number. Switching up a bit now, moving on to more the GPS watch, which has kind of become a necessity for runners. You see anyone running out, they're wearing a watch. They are definitely wearing a watch. I remember on the first episode when we had Robin and John Burnside on, I remember they were talking about when they ran, and then they mapped it out later to see how far they ran. The only thing they had to time was obviously a stopwatch. Obviously, that we've moved on from that. In terms of the GPS watch, do you think we've become too reliant on data? Having it literally just looking at the watch while we're out running.
I think it's fair to say out the two of us, I'm kind of more the data nut type of thing, and like I'll look at, you know, splits, heart rate, cadence, different things like that. And then with the new Garmin watches, they do and I'm not sure about the accuracy, but they do these VO2 max scores as well.
Yeah.
And kind of and then it gives you an arrow or an indication if your training is productive, unproductive, maintaining, peaking type of thing. And I think you can get caught up in it, really. You know, why is my heart rate not coming down? Or, you know, when I'm looking at my watch and checking my pace type of thing, you know, I should be running faster than it. And it's obviously a positive, because then you can track your progress. But then the other side of it is you can almost kind of start and beat yourself up about it, really. Sometimes, and I know kind of a lot of coaches out there talk about run to feel and encourage people to race without watches and kind of just race the race. So that is kind of a different side of things, but it's definitely got its positives for me, but it's also kind of got its drawbacks as well.
Like you definitely analyze everything way more than me. The only thing for me, the only really when I use it is when I'm racing, I would have said. if I go for a steady run, I don't normally look at my pace that much. And I think when you race, and it can have a positive or negative impact, because sometimes you can be running along and thinking, look at your watch and you think, oh, like I'm doing all right here and I feel quite good. And that's way better pace than what I thought I was running. And that can then make you feel better and you probably has a good impact on the full race. Other times I can look at my watch and think, oh my God, I'm not hitting my pace. I'm nowhere near it. I feel tired. And then you keep looking at your pace and it's still not what it needs to be. So then it probably has a negative impact on my full race. So it can completely depend. But with regards to sessions and things like that, I think it's great because, yeah, you can go back and look at that session and say, oh, yeah, well, I did each individual one at this and I've just done each individual one at this. Oh, that's better than what I did before. So for things like that, it's good. But that's probably all I look at when I'm racing to see how I'm getting on and pace and if I've done the session better than what I did it last time.
Yeah. From my point of view, I've never ran without a watch. I've only started running like past 3 or 4 years, whatever it is. And obviously the watches have been very much like they were in then, like it was a necessity, as so to speak. I find when I'm out, even I meant to be doing easy run, I'm still looking at my watch thinking I should be slowing down or maybe I could pick up a bit. And then if you're doing that too much, I find that I'm not training properly and then I'm tired when I shouldn't be tired or and stuff like that. What about you? Are you a data nerd, so to speak?
I am. I'm not so hung up about having like the best watch or anything like that. I mean, recently I've just moved up from a 410 to a 430. And this is the first time I've had heart rate. And I'm finding it very interesting to look at my heart rate and analyze some of that information that comes back from it when you upload. But like you, even when I'm doing an easy run, I will keep looking at my watch occasionally. And so I sometimes think, oh, I'm running too hard, or I'm not running hard enough, or you know, and really, I forget about that time. It's just maybe on the sessions that really you want to be using the watch. And I think, as Tracy said, it's nice to maybe do a session, and then if it's a club session, 2 months later, 3 months later, when it's next back on the plan again, you can look back and see if you've improved in terms of the number of intervals that you've done, or the times that you splits that you've had, and things like that. And that's where I think it's useful. I think if you become too over-reliant on it, it can have a negative impact. But, you know, it's a nice fancy bit of bling on my wrist, you know. I know that, obviously, Tracy, you're on Facebook and John, you're on Twitter. Do you find that there's a bit of a place for social media in running now then? Or do you not really engage with that much?
I think Facebook now is great because of obviously the times and what with COVID-19 kicking in, everyone's like on Aycliffe Running page kept in touch and kind of updated what they've done, and we've done different challenges and people have been able to put them on. So I think with stuff like that now, the way things are, I think that's been great because I think it's kept everybody talking to everybody and seeing what everyone's up to and probably motivated people as well. Like when John and Richard have set the challenges, people have obviously seen other people do them. So thought, oh, right, get myself out, I'll do it because they've done it. So I think at this moment in time, the Facebooks, it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not on Facebook.
Just goes on mine instead.
Yeah, for the club, I know. Tricky, man. Bro, giving the secrets away.
Secrets going out. I think that's again there, Corey.
edit. just to kind of what Tracy said, really, in terms of the, especially in this period, kind of it's been such a powerful tool really to get people out, the sharing of sessions, keep people motivated, keep people, not even just about the running, but the kind of the social, the personal aspect of it, isn't it? And just making sure that everyone's all right in what is a difficult time. And but I think the other side of social media, and kind of sometimes it allows you to spy on what people have been doing, a little bit of stalking, and you know, especially those such and such, you know, they put on about a race that they've just done. You're like, bloody hell, how did you run that? That's me doing double miles tomorrow, you know. So it has, I guess, it's like everything, it has its positives, but also its negatives when you see you know, if you're kind of beating yourself up about something in terms of like, oh, such and such has done that, you know, like, how, yeah. It's got that element as well.
Yeah, like I think like Strava, because I used to be on Strava, no longer on Strava, because I think that can sometimes have a negative impact if you're looking at other people's races and looking at the sessions they've done or they've gone out for a run and you think, oh, well, I should do that or I should be doing that pace, or and you can come a little bit obsessed with what other people are doing and rather than concentrate on what you're doing. And as well, I think if you're going out for a run, you feel like everyone has to be a good run because you feel like it's going on Strava and people are going to see it. So you feel the pressure to make sure it's a decent run and you stop going out for steady runs. But then at the same time, like John said, it can be positive because it motivates you to go out and do something. But also makes you a little crazy because you can run past your house. You haven't rounded your mile up, so you need to run further past your house to turn around and come back just to make sure you've rounded that mile up.
I've definitely got that crazy. The neighbours might think I'm nuts. Running around circles in front of the house, you know, and like, what's this lad doing? He's going to get run over.
Well, we've mentioned it, Strava. It's the big thing in running on the big social media platform for running. What do you make of the different, like, you've got the segments you can do, you've got all the different leaderboards. What do you make of them? Do you enjoy using that side of Strava?
Yeah, I think especially like kind of for some of the club sessions and those segments that are set up around there, it's always something that motivates you. And, you know, when you get that dreaded email, congratulations, you've been dethroned. You know, so that I do enjoy that. And it is a bit of motivation. But again, it's kind of sometimes you go out for an easy run and you're running past a segment that you know is a segment and you go, oh, should I not, you know, like, should I give it a go? And especially when I first signed up to Strava, it was something where you go out and you go segment hunting and try and bag a few, but kind of at the minute I've not bothered as much with it over the last couple of years really, but certainly when I first joined Strava, I was, you know, mindful of where segments were and trying to bag a few here and there really.
And yesterday morning.
I was thinking that when you said I haven't bothered with it for a bit.
No, that was, I'm going to give Des Fielding the blame for that. He said, oh, will you just come up with this one with us? I said, oh, yeah, no problem. And then he told us on the way up. It was all Des and I just stayed behind him. But I think I was starting my one behind him, which then we kind of finished closer than what we started, which meant I'd picked it up. But purely accidental, of course, you know what I mean?
I do have to say, I mean, I love a little bit of the banter around it, as we all know. But I think in terms of these times when we can't do structured sessions or things like that, I do think that the Strava segments have been a motivation for people. Because I know people are aiming for them left, right and centre. And as long as it's getting people out and they actually just take it, you know, as a bit of fun and nothing too serious, I think it does have a good place at the moment as a replacement session.
Definitely, no, it is. It's something that you can aim for and, you know, chuck a fast whatever it is in and pushes you on.
No, because even for a brief moment, I did consider going back on Strava just for the segments, just for a brief moment. And I was like, nah.
And they have, of course, they've taken some of the elements of Strava away now, haven't they, if you're not a subscriber. I know you've got 2 months free to, you know, a subscriber, but they're then going to take, I think, some of the leaderboards away and things like that. Free.
I mean, I get it because it's such an amazing tool, really. And you think about the research and development that goes into moving it forward and kind of all the stuff that, I don't know, technical stuff that must underpin it. And, you know, to get with it being a purely free app, or people paying and not other people paying. I get why they're doing it, but at the same time, if a lot of people, you know, don't pay for it and then remove from the leaderboards, it kind of devalues the leaderboards a little bit. You could tell them just to really pay for it, you know what I mean? But
I don't disagree. I really don't disagree because, I mean, I was previously using it for free and I have subscribed now. But I think I read that the company haven't actually made a profit in 10 years. Yeah. You can't afford to just keep like just knocking out free gear and free tech to people and not expect people to pay for it at the end of the day. So I mean, get people to pay for it. At the end of the day, I think it works out about something like £3.70 a week or something like that. And if you're using it as avidly as we do.
It's got a lot of new features on now, kind of there. Similar to what the Garmin does, you know, gives you that fitness score, if you like. I think it's called fitness freshness score, which allows you to kind of monitor, you know, the shape that you're in. I'm not quite sure how accurate it is. And also the intensity of your training. So you can look at, you know, your training range, whether you're under that range and you've not really put the work in that week, or kind of above that range, which shows that you maybe just need a little bit more recovery or something like that.
This week's club's virtual challenge is actually Strava app. Tracy, I know you and some of the girls went out this morning. What did you attempt to draw?
Well, we did attempt to do the Olympic rings, but oh my God, it's way harder than what we thought. You should have seen our first attempt. We were like trying to measure how big this one of the circles needed to be, and we had a tape measure and two bags of flour with us.
Yeah. Can you tell us about this?
And we did our first circle, and it was just a load of zigzag lines because the circle wasn't big enough for the GPS to be picked up. So we pretty much used the whole field at the Aircliff trying to fit in the five rings. As you can see, it wasn't great, but it was okay. A lot harder than what we thought it would be.
Paul, you've done one as well, haven't you?
Oh yeah. I kind of plotted it out on Google Maps before I went out, and then listed all the junctions and turnings that I needed to take. And unfortunately, I went up one road thinking I could get back onto the Great Aycliffe Way and go along that for a little bit and come back down the other side. But the residents had put a fence across, so I couldn't actually get access to the Great Aycliffe Way. So didn't quite turn out quite as I wanted to, but it was all right. It was okay. Just needed a bit of forethought beforehand.
So you had a different take. You didn't use a tape measure and a bag of flour then?
No flour, no cones. Just a bit of paper with a few street names and junctions on it, really.
I think Angela spilt some of the flour in a boot as well, so we didn't have all the flour we should have had.
And it was a particularly windy day today as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, so. Well, we attempted to put the flour out. It blew everywhere and we thought, this isn't going to work. Oh, dear.
I know when Donna put the challenge out, she put some examples of what people have done in the past. Like there's a Darth Vader one and things like that. And they always seem to be based in an American city, like New York, where it's just streets everywhere, like in a grid format. So it's very easy to do one. What are you, Paul? You looked at Aycliffe Match. And I know a few people mentioned it. It's like, we've got the obvious ones. We've got, is it the Hippo?
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that. Until someone mentioned the Hippo's Ear on their rope moor. What other ones do we have, which we've got ruled out?
It was a Fish and Shielding, that was banned, I think.
I think Peter Smith runs that one quite regularly.
Yeah. And Michelle Jane had done Reindeer, which was pretty cool, because she did that just before Christmas, but she did it by mistake. She just went for a run and it looked like a reindeer.
Oh.
There you go.
There you go.
Scooby runs banned as well, isn't it? The Scooby Doo.
That's the Scooby one, yes. I'm interested to see everyone's submissions over the weekend. See what quirky ones we get. I think we've kind of come towards the end. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about, want to add, or anything?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it all. Yeah, pretty much covered it all. I've got to say, though, my experience of my first club session at Aycliffe Running Club was quite different to Tracy's. I remember going to the Burnside Blast and kind of jogging up there, and I'm sure you won't mind us mentioning it, but Lee Wren was there. Just take the mickey out of you. So I was like, that was all right. I nice to meet you, Lee, you know. And then I heard Mark. Didn't know who he was at the time, Mark speaking to Rob, telling tales on him about Des and how he got drunk and then rocked up to cross country and then, you know, was drunk around the cross country. So I thought, well, looking back on it when I was thinking about, well, now it's changed there then, you know what I mean? And then doing the Burnside Blast, obviously, I remember coming up towards the end of it, maybe it was about 600 metres away from the Blue Bridge, and I was closing in on and Martin Knox at the time. And I got a real welcome because Martin kind of sensed I was there, looked over his shoulder, stuck out his elbows and turned on the jetpack and just absolutely dropped us. And I was just like, this is great. So I've had the Mickey taken out of us. You know, they obviously get rolling drunk before they go for a cross-country race. And, you know, I've nearly had two teeth knocked out by Martin elbowing us, you know what I mean?
It's like the ideal winning club.
Yeah, I did, but no, I thought, oh, this is a club I want to be part of, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Great advertisement.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, the very first session that I came to as well, we were doing the hills around Eastfields, and you come round, do the long hill, and then come back down. Telephone box loops. That's all right, the telephone box loops.
Yeah.
Mentioned Martin to me either, and every time I tried to pass Martin, no, zoom straight back in front of me again, zoom straight back in front of me again, and just wouldn't let me pass.
Yeah.
It was sort of like some kind of initiation that all new members have to go through.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, dear.
Do you know what we didn't do? We didn't get your next clue.
Oh, yeah, you didn't.
Oh, yes.
Did you guess it though, Dolly? Did you need it?
Well, I thought it might have been Kipchoge.
Yeah, it was Kipchoge. Was Kipchoge. No, I was thinking, like, what can I say so it doesn't give it away dead easy? You know, I was thinking, oh, like I say, he's a zen-like guy, and you know, no human is limited. I said, like, oh, they're going to get it dead easy.
Yeah,
so I had a bit of a scroll through his Wikipedia, so I hope it's right. Actually, on Wikipedia, it could be completely wrong. Yeah, and I know he does have one gold medal, so that was right.
Now I
chose him just because I think obviously what he's achieved recently and stuff. Is just and kind of over his career, especially going to the marathon and stuff. And the more you watch about him and kind of the way he lives his life and he applies himself to his training and the consistency in his training and the hard work and that kind of mind over matter, really, I just think it's really inspirational stuff.
And incredibly humble with it.
Oh, massively. Yeah. Oh, hugely so. And he wears really cool training.
I was just about to say that.
Have his been banned now, or is he okay with those ones?
No, they're on the. Well, this is one of the worst. So obviously, kind of locked down, not spending got nothing to spend money on. So, right. So we're going to release the Nike Alpha Fly, and they appeared on the Nike apps on the app. Anyway, it said coming soon. I thought, right, when they come out, you know, I'll just treat myself. Not tell Tracy they'll arrive, and oh, look what the postman's delivered, and then I was watching them. And then I got an email from Sport Shoes, and Sport Shoes said, oh, like launching the Nike Alpha Fly. I thought, oh, great. I go on the Nike app, went on the Nike app, and they'd sold out. I was like, what? What's going on there? Went on the Sport Shoes, and they had like size 2.5 left. And
so basically, it wasn't meant to be.
This must have happened in a day. But then saw a couple of local runners had bought them, and put them on, you know, Twitter and what have you, kind of unboxing them type of thing. So they managed to get them their hands on them. But, yeah, they must have just sold out within a day. And they're still out of stock. So I'm like, oh. So, yeah.
You never know. You'll get your hands on them a pair at some point.
One day.
And then the PBs will come.
Yeah.
It's all about the PBs.
All about the PBs. Well, thanks, John and Tracy, for coming on. You've both been wonderful and great fun. I hope you've had fun as well.
Thanks.
It's been good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Corey. Yeah, it was all good.
Yeah, sorry for the stitch-up earlier on. Paul, have you got anything to add?
No, I think we've covered quite a lot in this week's podcast. I think that's quite good. I had a couple of other things jotted down, but to be fair, you know, I think we've covered most things. So,
yes. So from now on, podcast name is going to be called Less Talking, More Running. On that note, goodbye.